all of you to this session on number four on quality reporting. Quality reporting has been one of the most popular subjects during the Q conferences when it comes to number of abstracts supported and submitted and also presentation selected. In this afternoon we have four presentations which take roughly 15 minutes each, so there will be a good time for discussion after the presentation. Let me introduce myself shortly. I'm Kari Dier for Statistics Finland and work as a senior researcher mainly on statistical methodology but also on quality issues and especially on quality reporting issues. So welcome here and let us start. The first speaker is Mr. Mirko Herzner from Destatis Germany, where he acts as an assistant head of quality section. So please.
Well, good afternoon, and thank you for the introduction, Kari. As he mentioned, my name is Mirko Herzner. I'm assistant head of section for data quality management at Destatis, which is Germany's federal statistical office. And my topic today is our quality handbook and our quality principles, a topic which I've already presented 2 years ago at Q2016. So today I'm going to focus on the progress made, lessons learned, some further development we are working on, and some short outlook. Our quality handbook is our framework for ensuring data quality in German official statistics. It's not only meant to be read by our statisticians, by subject matter experts, but it's also meant to provide detailed information about data quality assurance for our users. And the most important part of our quality handbook are the quality principles. The quality principles are a collection of about 340 specific quality assurance measures for each of the sub-processes of the GSBPM. This does not only comprise comprehensively used measures, but in many cases, these measures constitute, let's say, ambitious development goals for our subject matter statistics. So not all of them are already fulfilled. And the idea is that all of these quality principles are to be applied by all of our statistics, if applicable. An example for a quality principle is here on the slide. It's an example from the subprocess 4.3 run collection, where we asked, where the principle says the respondents are given the details of a point of contact, which is qualified to provide support if necessary. So this is one of about 340 quality principles and one of 16 for this specific subprocess 4.3. So what are we going to do with these quality principles? We are going to start a systematic stocktaking in all of our statistics starting this year. This slide was meant to be animated, which it is not now because it didn't work. So I will have to walk you through without help of the animation. So this stocktaking, which we are going to start, consists of four steps. The first step is the pre-filtering of our quality principles. We put them all into the form of a checklist so that they can easily be answered. And this checklist will be pre-filtered according to important characteristics of the statistics in question. So for example, if we take this last row here, which deals with surveys with an obligation to provide information, if my survey doesn't have such an obligation by law, then this whole principle is not very useful or not relevant for the statistics, and so we will filter it out before the actual stock taking. In total, we have about 30 such criteria. They range from are you a primary survey, are you of our interviewers in the field important questions like these. And by pre-filtering, we will be able to reduce the number of items to be answered by the specific survey from about 340 to 200, 250 on average. Next, second step is the beginning of the actual stock taking. And here we will first ask, is the specific principle relevant for your statistics? So this is what you mark here. If it is relevant, do you already fulfill it? Next column here. And if you said no, no, it's not relevant, or no, I don't fulfill it yet, then you are asked to provide a short explanation, which is this field. So for example, for this first row here, where we speak about statistic-specific user surveys, if you said, no, this is not relevant for my statistics, an explanation could be that you have a very small number of users and you think that a user-specific user, survey-specific user survey is not useful in your statistics. Second example, filtering is conducted automatically. You said, yes, very relevant for my statistics, but we don't do it yet, but it will be implemented during the next reprogramming. So this is an example of what the stock taking could look like. We already did a pilot exercise concerning this stock taking with six very different statistics in 2016-2017. This were statistics from the huge external trade statistics to the very small statistics on edible mushrooms. They had to answer between 192 and 327 quality principles, so on average 250. The results for these six statistics are that we have overall fulfillment rates between 78 and 92%. Which I consider to be quite good, keeping in mind that some of these quality principles constitute new measures and activities which have not been systematically applied in our statistics before. So this is quite a high number. But the picture is has much more variety when we look at the different GSBPM phases. For the phases 1, specify needs, and 5, collect, we have average fulfillment rates above 90%, so this can be considered strength of German official statistics. But on the other hand, for phase 8, evaluate, we only have a fulfillment rate or an average fulfillment rate of 61%, so there's lots of room for improvement here. What did we learn from our pilot exercise? First, always involve more than one person in the stock taking. So not only one statistician who is responsible for the survey should fill in the questionnaire or the checklist. By involving more than one person, misunderstandings can more easily be sorted out, or it also, which is even more important, enhances objectivity when you have to discuss diverging views because you are supposed to come up with a consensus in for the checklist. Second, it's very helpful when each participant has a good knowledge of the GSBPM as the underlying process model. This helps to understand why a certain quality principle is covered in a specific position, and it also helps to understand why some aspects seem to reoccur at later stages with only a slightly different wording. For example, the aspects of classifying and coding are first covered in phase 2, then again in the processing phase in phase 5, and then again as a content of the quality reports in phase 6. And the third lesson learned is the time spent for answering each checklist. This is, in our opinion, quite reasonable, with about 1 minute per principle, even including some discussions where necessary. So for most principles, you need less than a minute, but for some you discuss a bit, so on average it's 1 minute, which means when we say it's on average 240 quality principles to be answered, that it takes about 4 hours for each of our statistics to fill in this checklist. So even if we consider this pilot project a success, there are still some further developments which we are currently working on. One is we are very aware that filling out this stocktaking for all our 350 statistics is a huge workload for subject matter areas. So it's very important to have optimal preparation in the subject matter areas before beginning the stocktaking. And we are going to tackle this problem with an e-learning module, which for one explains the whole stocktaking process and what it's good for. But it also clarifies important questions which might not be so clear when you start the stocktaking. One of these issues is the question of relevance. So the question, when do I say this quality principle is relevant for my statistics or not? We speak here about what I call absolute relevance, meaning the question, is this principle relevant or useful for your statistics at all? So cost or effort reasons are not valid criteria for a rejection here. Similar questions come up when we speak about the fulfillment. Our subject matter statisticians are only supposed to answer yes or no. There is no partially implemented or a similar gradation. So the leading question here should be, can you say in good conscience that you fulfill this principle? And the final aspect we are going to tackle in the e-learning is the adequacy of documentation. Many of the quality principles asked for some kind of documentation, but not for all of these documentations there's some fixed template or some guideline. So we have some questions in the e-learning which help answering the question if a documentation is adequate or not. A second further development we are working on is the classification of our principles. It's not surprising that not all of these 340 quality principles are of equal importance, and they also deal with different aspects of statistical quality management. So we are currently developing a classification which aims at allowing for a better controlling of this whole process by our top management, and it should also help our subject matter areas when they have to prioritize improvement actions which should be started after the stock taking. So our classification will consist of two components. First, we have an importance between 1, normal, and 3, very high. And we will also assign one or more of four topics to each quality principle, which are principles dealing with further development, continuous improvement. Some of them deal with efficiency, others with documentation, and we have a final category for all the other principles. So this is what we are working on currently. So to conclude, the implementation of the quality handbook and the quality principles especially has been a very important step for German official statistics and helps us further develop a systematic data quality management. In the pilot test, we found out that the whole process of stock taking works, that we are going to expand it to a large number of statistics. We also found a few lessons learned and a few areas for further improvement, both concerning the content of the quality principles as well as the whole process. And communication and training are very central when promoting this whole stock-taking process to our subject matter areas. A short outlook. A first round of the stocktaking for all federal statistics will start later this year. The plan is to conduct the stocktaking in all our 350 statistics until 2021. Annual reports for the top management and for general staff will summarize the findings, and we are currently working on an IT solution to facilitate both the stocktaking and the reporting, because in the pilot we still did it with an Excel checklist, which is clearly not feasible when we started with 350 statistics. Thank you for your attention, and I'm looking forward to your questions later on.
Thank you very much. The next speaker is Mrs. Grete Olsen from Statistics Norway, where she works as a senior advisor in methodology, especially on quality issues. Please.
think I need some help to find my presentation. Thank you. My theme is quality system in a digitalized and modernized statistical system. I base this presentation and the paper on the work my colleagues Aslaug Foss and Ane Seierstad do in establishing generic quality indicators for a new digitalized production system in Statistics Norway. The main approach to the work on quality indicators is based on the UNECE quality indicators for GSBPM, the generic statistical business model. So this is the vision for a streamlined production system, and this is still the vision, as you can see in this picture. However, this spring, Statistics Norway is replanning the program for digitalizing and modernizing. We have to reduce the input to the program and prioritize just a few areas the coming years. So 2022 is not realistic anymore. But the work on establishing quality indicators continues. And this drawing is illustrating the streamlined production system that we want. We follow the general decisions made in Statistics Norway and think that a step-by-step approach is useful. So we start with indicators for collect, and now we are continuing with indicators for process, analyze, and dissemination, following the GSBPM. We search for indicators that will cover all statistics or some indicators that will cover groups of statistics. But there should also be possible to create extra indicators for each statistics later on. We start with simple indicators that's easy to use, and to give us the opportunity to measure the quality and workload, the indicators will measure quantity, ratio, and percent. When we start with collect, it's because we are mostly working on the process 5 process. And what kind of quality indicators do we need in process 5 when the data comes from collect 4, collect process 4? What kind of output do we need from collect? We need some metadata and indicators following the data from process 4 collect till process 5 process. We need information on data from the sources and about what is done in process, the process collect. This is the process for collect, and this is the process for process. So the source data are collected and treated, and then they are... this is the process for process. Editing and impute and different other activities, and then we have the process data. And we want the quality indicators to follow the data all the way. Oops. Later on in the production process, we will need metadata, included quality indicators about what's done in process 5, yes, like editing, impute, etc. But so far, we have concentrated on generic indicators for source data and the process collect. This looks obvious, and maybe we should take this for granted. I don't know. More than one time, I have seen colleagues spend quite a lot of time to find the data they need and to find information about the data. So far, we concentrate on a few simple indicators that will follow the data throughout the process all the way to disseminate and evaluate. One huge problem is all the different formats data have when they come to Statistics Norway. All producers of statistics look forward to the day when their data is transformed into Statistics Norway's format before they start working on them. Can we read the data and are the data in the right format? That's important information, an important quality indicator. And furthermore, what is missing in the data set? Before starting the work on producing statistics, I need an overview of the data. How big is the data set? How many units, how many variables? What is missing? And how many duplicates do we have in the data set? And then, what happened in the control of the data in the collect process? How many hits did we have on hard and soft controls? What's the quantity and ratio of hits in the controls? And did the data come with comments from respondents or register owners? For surveys, of course, we need indicators on response and non-response, and if possible, reasons for a non-response. Here you can see the vision for the future, this tower of data. The metadata and the quality indicators will follow the data and be stored together with the data. They will be easy to access in every activity in producing the statistics. This definition of indicators is a start concerning one small part of the vision for a streamlined production system. The intention is that the indicators will be automatically produced. We are now starting on the next step, quality indicators for process 5 process. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now we are slightly ahead of our schedule, but let us continue. So the next speaker is Mr. Agustin Canada from Ine, Spain, where he works as a quality manager and happened to be the person responsible for the previous quality conference in Madrid 2 years ago.
Okay, thank you, Kari, for your words and our experience in organizing a conference. But every new conference improves the previous one. Then I like to take the opportunity to congratulate already in this first day to our colleagues from Poland. Okay, in this short presentation, I'm going to speak about the stakeholders. Stakeholders are mentioned today during maybe 90% of the presentation, because we are in a world in which the official statistics are crucial. We need the receiving the feedback from the stakeholders, from the rest of the society, and then we are going to try to make the perception of all the interests of these different groups of people and institutions linked to our work. I divide this presentation in three main parts. First, I'm going to show you a broad picture of the role of the external stakeholders of the INE in the quality management systems. And the second point, I'm going to give you some methods how to deal with the stakeholders from different tools. And in the third point, we speak about some new initiatives very recent to engage in with stakeholders in a deeper way. Let me just clarify before entering into the presentation, given the time limits, the obvious time limits of this presentation. Although these results are included in the quality reviews, we are focused in some specific areas. Quality reviews are mainly at the third point. Let me allow my presentation by remaining something that all of you know about the role of stakeholders in the not only in the INE but in the NSI's quality management. What is a statistical quality? Statistical quality, as we all know, is understood, is defined as data fit for purpose, or data, the ability of data to satisfy state or employee users' needs. That is correct, but nevertheless, user perspective is not the only reference for assessing the quality of NSI. There are other group of interests, or there are groups, social and institutional groups, that are taken into account from a different perspective, and we deal with all these groups. For instance, data providers, the media, the government, the statistical institution. In this chart, you can give a very simplified summary of the main categories of the stakeholders, the four main categories we all know: users, data providers, government, and a statistical institution. Don't be afraid, I'm not going to enter into detail to read all the different group. The only objective of this chart is just to remain the complexity of all the different groups which are involved in our activity, which are involved, in fact, in the quality management for a National Statistical Institute. Let me just to mention the most known of this category, the category of users, include in fact several very relevant and very different categories: household and enterprises are users, general public professional, that we call now heavy users, academic researchers, the media, of course, government, public sector users. Then we have different interest groups, different actors with very different and sometimes contradictory interests concerning statistics. And just to put some examples, also very known for all of you, users require data, but require data as many detail as possible, as soon as possible, as updated, relevant, of course. But from the perspective of respondents, and respondents are worried about reducing the response burden, the simplification of the questionnaires, the respect to the privacy, or the government taking us a different approach, because government is also a user, is as a responsible for the budget, is asking for saving resources. In fact, what is the challenge for the NSI? What is the challenge for the INE as in the rest of the NSIs in the world? Produce statistics fit for the user's purpose, but taking into account the views of all the different stakeholders, data providers, government, etc. What is quality statistics? As our European Statistics Code of Practice said, statistics must be statistics that fulfill all the characteristics to satisfy the stakeholders: relevant, reliable, timely. This is more or less, as you know, the principles of the code. Then, from this introduction, this take to the second aspect of this presentation, in which we can ask about how to approach to these different, very different interests, very different needs and perception of our stakeholders. Then we have to establish different methods also for every kind of stakeholders. In the case of data suppliers, just to mention some examples taken from the INE, from my institution. We have a program since 6 years ago, a program to reduce yearly the response burden in the normal surveys. We have also the different agreements with data owners, in the past administrative data owners, in the present and in the future we know that we have also the private data owners. In the case of government public, our efforts are made in improving statistical literacy and showing the value of statistics to the responsible for the politics. Let us focus in the case of users. Of course, we have speak about all the different kind of stakeholders, but we can focus in user. Why? Because the way of studying users allow us to give a broad picture of all the group of interest. How to approach to the needs, the perceptions of the users? To the same, the INE of Spain as the rest of the NSIs encompass different tools, from the typical user satisfaction survey to other tools, quantitative and qualitative, web analytics, social media, some specific studies of impact of INE data in the media, in which we made a monetary and economic valuation. We presented this method in some of the past conferences. And also, of course, traditional methods as focus group and the advisory boards with experts. Referring to the main tools, which is the user satisfaction survey, then you have here an overview of the characteristics. This is compiled on a regular basis since 2007, every 3 years. The last one was the 2016. The questionnaire is structured according to the quality dimension of the code of practice, plus additional questions on the quality of services, maybe mainly in the dissemination of the habitual use of statistics. And there are also two general questions about the global quality of INE and the degree of confidence, the trust in our statistics. It's broken down by statistical domains. We consider different user segments. And the findings are a main input in the INE statistical national plans. All of the satisfaction surveys are freely available, if you are interested, through our website. Just a couple of comments, a couple of characteristics of our most recent satisfaction survey, the 2016. We introduced, among other, two main novelties. First, a specific module for a kind of very relevant user, which is the media. And second, some new question that allow us to calculate a user satisfaction index. Why a specific module? Why introduce a specific treatment for the media? Because as you, most of you know, in the case of the satisfaction survey and in other many activities. This very relevant for us type of user, which has the media, gives also a low response rate because of very known reasons. Then we have made a special effort in our last survey to get a higher response rate, and by then we simplify the questionnaire. We adapt the questionnaire to the feeling, to the needs of the media, and also we use a specific method to obtain this kind of information. In the case of the user, the satisfaction index, well, it is based on an additional question. You have there the wording of the question to every of the user surveyed.
we ask that rank in order the importance, the previous aspect of the statistics. With the outcomes of this question, we obtain the weights of this simple equation. It's a weighting equation in which we give the different relevance for each of the user to the six categories. You can observe that there are six categories there in terms of the code of practice. It means the accessibility clarity, because accessibility clarity, in fact, there are several questions, it's a group of questions in the questionnaire, and then it's the easiest way is to focus in these six. This chart is an illustration of the outcomes of the of this index, in which we have compared for three a segmentation in three main groups: academic, public sector, and the other. What is the relevance and the relative importance they gave to the different characteristics? This is an example that we could manage. We could improve our normal user satisfaction surveys. Then let's move to the third section of this presentation. In spite of all this effort, in spite of all these tools we have used along the years, we felt that we need some new additional elements. What for? Well, for this objective expressed in this very ambitious phrase, transforming the role of stakeholders, turning them into partners in the statistical activities. This is our future objectives. And for that, we have implemented additional tools that come from the traditional method, traditional tools, to a new innovative technologies. In the case of traditional, we have introduced two different measures I'm going to explain later. And in the case of innovative, is an exercise with internet, is a web scraping exercise. In the traditional, the first one is this, is we create a specific group for quality assessment, for quality reviews, in the High Council on Statistics. High Council on Statistics is the advisory board of the National Statistical Institute, with representative of all our stakeholders, trade unions, company association, university, academic research, etc., social institution. And then we designed a first pilot exercise in 2017. We choose the labor cost index because the relevance of these statistics. And the methodology is the typical methodology, it's the traditional, following quality assessment standards. We made a previous quality report by the unit in charge of these statistics with our cooperation, with the quality unit cooperation. There were an analysis of the quality reports by the representative of the High Council of Statistics. Then the discussion on a specific session of the council. And finally, a report with recommendation and a plan of improvement actions. The second initiative in the same line is organizing a roundtable session in the statistical conference that INE, in cooperation with the Association of Statisticians in Spain, organized every year. We started to design last year, and then the first conference in which we have organized this roundtable was this year in May 2018. We chose the statistical domain, the Harmonized Consumer Price Index. The methodology was the assessment of this from a previous report made by our colleagues in charge of this product. There was an assessment by two relevant experts in these fields, which is one from the academics and other for research institution, and then the feedback from the INE and action improvement plans. And then the web scraping exercise is the application of these technologies through an analysis on some open data research repositories. The starting point of this project is the availability of a centralized repository of all the webs of the Spanish universities, there was an agreement some years ago, and then there are homogeneity among all these webs, and these are accessible through this repository. What is the objective? To increase our knowledge using that repository to make a deeper analysis of the use of our statistics. And then we go to the end of this presentation, and the objective is to remark the role of the stakeholders, to present our current initiatives and some new initiatives. As you can see, it's a mix of innovative and traditional. And nevertheless, let me finish, and I'm sorry for that, because if 90% of the presentation in this conference can speak about a stakeholder, maybe 99% of the presentation in this conference has to speak about digital revolution. And then I can't avoid this challenge. And then in the digital era, we have new types of stakeholders, mainly the private holders of massive data, the private holders of big data, that, as you all know, give us a new and very fascinating challenge. Let me just to say that we are involved in the Digicom project. One of the part of the Digicom project of the Vision 2020 is focused in the user profile and the user dealing. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Agustin. Our fourth speaker is Mrs. Carmen Picon Aguilar from European Central Bank, where she works as a statistician in macroeconomic statistics. Please, the floor is yours.
Good afternoon. It's funny to have two in Spanish, one after the other, but I'm a statistician, so I cannot avoid to see that in your paper there were three authors, and the three had a family name with an ñ, that is a very Spanish letter. So I'm Spanish, but I don't have an ñ in my family name. What I have to say is that I'm not the only author of this paper. There are another two colleagues that you will see at the end of the presentation, the emails. And in particular, because this presentation goes about, it's completely different to the presentations that we have seen so far. So it goes more to a practical point of view, how to assess a particular dimension of quality, that is the geographical dimension of statistics. We have implemented a few indicators, and my other two colleagues are the genius behind these indicators in the design and in the calculation. So let's start with this. As I said, it's a little bit different, but I think it's good for the diversity. So when we try to assess the quality of the geographical dimension, a variable that we try to measure is what I'm going to define as asymmetries, and you will see what I mean by that. So I will define the asymmetry, I will see how we can measure, and then I will describe this set of indicators that we have designed in order to measure and to improve the quality of this dimension part of the statistics. So let's start with the definition of asymmetries. And asymmetries, I think it is in macroeconomic statistics, but is related or is inherent to any kind of, I don't see the screen, I don't see that one. So it's related to any kind of data that we can find mirror statistics or mirror data. So let's be, there is something missing there. Sorry, no. So it's very easy to understand what is an asymmetry. When you have a transaction, there is always two parts, so a seller and a buyer. And normally, or very frequently, more frequently than we would like to have, especially as a statistician, the information that has in mind the seller is not the same that the information that the buyer has. For example, if I buy a microwave, and I go to a shop and I say, well, I'm sorry, it's too heavy, I cannot bring it with me. And then the guy of the shop is going to say, oh, don't worry, I can get somebody that do it for you for a price. So instead of paying 200 euros, you are going to pay 210, and that's it. So I'm the buyer, I would say my microwave was 210 euros, but the seller is going to say 200, and this other 10 euros is whatever he has done to the boy to carry the microwave that is not considered part of the transaction. So we have a very simple transaction with two different valuations. What is the problem when we go to macro statistics, and especially when you have balance of payments, that you have the buyer and the seller in two different countries? There is no way to reconcile this information. So imagine how easy it is that these kind of things are in the reporting, and how these kind of differences in the valuations or other kind of things can be piled up in our macroeconomic statistics. So the reasons why we can have these asymmetries in our statistics are very clear. We can also cover different agents, different sellers, buyers in our economies. It could be that my microwave, I say that if I buy it the 30th of June, that it was in June, and the seller at the end have all the accounts in July. So it belongs to two different months. When we do statistics at monthly basis or even a quarterly basis, these things can happen. So as my very simple example, it could be a problem of valuation. But imagine when you go to balance of payments statistics with this globalization, these very complex transactions of multinationals, this is almost impossible that the two countries that are involved in one transaction collect information in a comparable way. So these are the reasons, and I say even here on the corner, you can see that when we talk about balance of payments, and still I have no mention, but it's going to be about external sector statistics, we all have the same manual in Europe, we follow the BPN6, and over there you have a lot of standards that you have to follow, but even if you follow all these standards, you find big problems of asymmetries, even in a group of countries like is the European Union. So then the issue is, so I have defined what is an asymmetry, why we can find asymmetries, and the most important thing is how we can analyze this type of asymmetries. As you can imagine, when we talk about external sector statistics, balance of payments, international investment position, trade statistics, this geographical dimension is very important, and the asymmetries are very important. So when we talk about bilateral comparison, so if I am producing the data of Germany, and I'm saying, well, I have my balance of payments with respect to the rest of the world, to me, this is the most important thing. It's not so relevant if these transactions is vis-a-vis France or vis-a-vis Belgium. They are very close, so who really cares about that? Obviously, the public cares more and more. And also, when this kind of bilateral situation happened, like probably in the last weeks, a country is saying, I have a current account deficit vis-a-vis you, and the other country is also saying, no, I also have a current account deficit vis-a-vis you. It is impossible that two countries in a bilateral relation have both a deficit. One of them has to have a surplus. And this is something that is coming now more and more frequently in our news. So it is important. The asymmetries is a very important variable, and it's also very important to assess to improve, because at the end it goes directly to the quality or of our external statistics, our external sector statistics. So as you can imagine, I'm working in the European Central Bank, and what we do with the balance of payments is we produce the balance of payments of a currency union, of the euro area. So all these bilateral problems or asymmetries, you put it in a currency union, this explodes totally, because whatever it's just a problem bilateral between two countries, then when we put all the transactions at the level of the euro area, it is so relevant that the country said, my transaction is vis-a-vis France and not vis-a-vis UK, because UK is outside the euro area. So, and this generates that when we create the euro area balance of payments, it means transactions of the euro area residents vis-a-vis non-euro area residents. So all the transactions in the euro area should be consolidated, means that all the purchase should be equal to the sales. And this is not true. And then you can see here in this chart how difficult is the interpretation of all these asymmetries, because what all the, and this is only for the financial account, and you can see that, I don't know how familiar are you with the balance of payments, but there are five components. One is in the financial account, the direct investment, the other investment, the financial derivatives, the reserve assets, and the portfolio investment. Reserve assets and portfolio investment do not have asymmetries by construction, but the direct investment, it is one of the blue bar is one of the main sources for asymmetries, and the other investment also. Sometimes, some quarters, these two components are more or less compensated, but there are some quarters that they are not. So there are these figures, and sometimes we are talking about 100 billions, are difficult to explain to the press why these kind of things happen, and in certain way erode the quality of the euro area aggregates. So then, now that I have explained this, you can understand why we are so interested in assess the asymmetries and also to fight against them, and to this will improve the quality of the data of the countries, but also the quality, in our case, of the European Union aggregates, of the euro area also. So for that reason, we have developed three synthetic indicators that try to see not only how it is the bilateral data between two countries, it try to understand the group of countries, so in our case for the euro area, but it can, these indicators can be applied for to any group of countries. So we have defined these indicators. They try, using all the bilateral available between this group of countries, it try to understand which country has a kind of recurrent behavior against most of the countries. We are not talking about one transaction, one particular quarter that has huge asymmetries. We are talking also about a kind of recurrent behavior that can really help the countries to improve coverage, to improve surveys, or to really understand what is going on and why they have these problems. So these indicators that you will see, we try to make them very easy to interpret, and that will be the help for these further discussions. So these are the three indicators that you can find in the paper. I'm not going to explain now, but there are, the first one is mainly based on the idea that all the bilateral data for a particular country, that is the country I, for a particular quarter, because this is for quarterly data, or well, you can also apply it for monthly data or annual. So for each country, for each survey period, you can calculate this indicator. And the idea is that, for example, this talking about assets, the A, and the liabilities, means that the assets of the country I vis-a-vis another country C should be equal to the liabilities of the country C that is saying that has vis-a-vis the country I. So here we are defining an asymmetry of these particular two countries. We are making the addition of all the counterparts of country I, and the idea is that with this indicator, we see all the bilateral data for this group of countries, how good it is. With the second indicator, we are not so strict. So we don't try to see if all the bilateral data are correct. What we try to see is if also for a country I, if all the assets that this country has vis-a-vis all the components in the summary, in our case, country I vis-a-vis all the countries in the euro area are equal to the liabilities that all the countries of the euro area are saying that they have vis-a-vis I. The idea with this is like, is the country I able to identify if a country is in the euro area or not? So I say it's less strict, this one, and you will see in the results that they are always much better. because also there is a kind of net of errors. So the third indicator is the relevance, and this is really important for a currency union or for a group of countries. So the idea is, okay, it could be that a country has very large indicators here or here, but then they are not relevant for the economy, for the group, because the weight of this country in the group is quite small. So now we will see, as I promised. One of the components in the financial account of the euro area that really worries us is the foreign direct investment transactions. So the asymmetries are quite large and quite recurrent. So we have applied this indicator just for this paper as an example to the foreign direct investment for the period from Q1 2015 to the last quarter of 2017. And we have applied for all the euro area countries. As you can see, the first thing is that there is no lines for Greece and Slovakia, and it's because we don't have data for those two countries. Means we don't have bilateral data. In order to implement and to calculate these indicators, you really need all the bilateral data between all the countries. So you really need a lot of data, and that is the way to summary to I mean the indicators, what they are doing. It's a calculation with all this bilateral data. But in any case, Greece and Slovakia, they don't have a big, huge weight in the euro area in direct investment. So we can really take conclusions for the euro area without these two countries. So what you can see is, as I told you, well, these are box plots. And the idea, for example, in Germany, all the calculations from these 3 years for each quarter is included here. You see that there are for some quarters that are, by the way, I didn't say that the indicator is built and moves between 0 and 1. 1 is horrible, 0 is perfect. So the idea, for example, is that for Germany, there are some quarters that works quite fine. There are some quarters, for whatever reason, there are large transactions, complex multinationals, whatever. And then, so they perform worst. But this is the median, and the median tells you that is the best country in the euro area if you just think in the bilateral data with all the countries. On the opposite side, you find Cyprus that is really the worst. Hmm? So you see that more or less all the countries are above 0.5, the median. And if you compare, this is the internal, so the one that it checks the bilateral. If you go to the external indicator, you see that the scores are much better, and because the countries in the euro area are better identifying if a country is in the euro area or not. But they have problems to identify if it's exactly this country or the other one. So the third indicator, you see that the relevance, so countries like Cyprus and Malta, that they have serious problems to identify the geographical dimension or to really match bilateral data with all the countries in the euro area, you see that suddenly when they move to the relevance, they are not so relevant. And then here I have mentioned Netherlands because it's quite okay in this ranking. It's also going to worst, but with the indicator better. But then when we go to the relevance, it's one of the problematic countries. And obviously, one of the things that you can see here is that Netherlands, Ireland, Belgium became quite relevant. And one of the reasons is that with all the SPEs that you can find in these countries, you can imagine that the complexity to get the good bilateral data and the geographical dimension properly, it is one of the most problematic issues in their statistics. So, I think I have to go. So, this was the conclusions, just to finalize. Asymmetries are important for the quality of our figures, are important to the users, for the users to understand our figures. The use of these three indicators in a combined way, we think that can help to understand what is exactly the quality of each country and which part what they have really to improve. So finally, these indicators can be used every time that you have bilateral data and for any kind of indicator. So that was an example only for foreign direct investment, but can be applied for much more variables. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And now it is time for comments and questions. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you. My name is Robert Opschut from Balance of Payment Statistics at Eurostat. We do similar analysis as Carmen does for the ECB for the non-financial accounts, and we come across the same problems, of course. There's just one issue when we do these comparisons on a bilateral basis. I think the fundamental question in this analysis of asymmetries is who's the culprit? Where's the problem? Is country A the problem, or is it the counterpart, the mirror, the problem? And that can produce quite maybe premature conclusions depending on your perspective or what you want to see as a result. I give you an example. Currently, we have a surplus in trade transactions and services with the US, European Union. The US has the same as we have. So we have surpluses with each other. Quite interesting. And in these political days, there is, of course, a question, well, what's the point now? I mean, who's right and who's wrong? So we tried to investigate in this, and we found that, among others, we found a few problems on our side in the EU, but we also saw that the US has a few problems in respecting the PPM6 standard, which was mentioned today. This created a few differences which could be simply explained on that basis. So the politically correct or fair answer would be the problem usually lies on both sides. So you cannot simply say country A and B is the culprit. The nice thing in your presentation here is that you have a range of countries in the currency union. So you can say if country Cyprus, as you have mentioned, scores badly with all the other nations, with all the other members, then there is fairly probable, fairly likely that there is a problem here. So that was just a few remarks and ideas to Carmen's very interesting composite indicators. Thank you.
Thank you. Jolanta Szutkowska from Statistics Poland. I have general questions to our speakers. Do you think that your quality framework, including quality handbooks, cover all activities necessary to increase response rate in your surveys, to provide good data quality and to promote innovation approach? What are missing and needs further development? Thank you.
Take one more before everyone replies.
I'm Kristina Pirakou from Hellenic Statistical Authority, and I would like to ask about the quality report and if there is any connection with the SIMS. Single integrated metadata structure. Thank you.
I have also a question as far as the handbook is concerned. Do you invented something new, or is it based on quality handbook elaborated by Eurostat? And the second question is, how far is your checklist from the SAP?
Let us have replies and comments from our speakers.
Thank you. Okay, I will start from the top, which was the question if our handbook covers all the aspects mentioned, like response rates, improvement of response rates, accuracy, and innovation. Well, innovation falls kind of short, I would say. It's there are no quality principles dealing with innovation, or not in the strictest of senses. The other two dimensions are covered pretty well, but a general remark, these quality principles are on a kind of a high level, so each statistics has to make it their own. It's the responsibility of our subject matter statisticians to take our prompts and deal with it and decide on how to apply it to their statistics. So we provide prompts, but it's up to the subject matter statisticians to take this lead. Then there was a question with quality reporting, which is, well, even if the session has a name with quality reporting, I wouldn't say my topic has much to do with quality reporting. So SIMS and all such are covered in our quality reports, but I didn't speak about them at all, so I will skip this part. And then was the question if we invented something new. And yeah, for the most part, we took what we could find in other countries. So we had good source material, for example, in Austria, which was quite convenient because it has had the right language already. But we also draw quite a few ideas from the Netherlands, from Canada, from Finland even. So we took what we could find and we made it our own and filled in the gaps. So there might be some new ideas, but maybe it's not more than 20%. And finally, the connection to DESAP. This is quite interesting because we had we had DESAP in a German version, even an enhanced version, not the original European version from 2005 or whenever it was, but we had a better version in our from our point of view, which was used for quite some time in parallel. So we started introducing these quality principles, but we also did DESAP. But the question came up if we intend to keep both instruments alive. And we finally decided that our quality principles and the stock taking, which I've shown you, covers all of the aspects which are also covered in DESAP, but on a higher level. We are on a higher level than in DESAP. DESAP is much more in detail, but still, the decision was made that for our situation, it's more adequate to follow this route with the quality principles on this higher level than to have this more detailed instrument of DESAP. And so we decided we can't do both. We will get rid of DESAP for now.
Was this questions for me as well? Yeah. You asked if we have invented something new. I don't think we have. The aim is to systemize and streamline both the production and the quality indicators, and on a high level have generic quality indicators. They are based mostly on the GSBPM quality indicators. And we also use the code of practice, of course. From the DSAP, it's a long time since I was thinking about DSAP, but we did check out all the statistics, 2005 maybe, or a bit later. Now we do quality reviews of one statistics at a time, maybe two, three, or four each year. And this is, of course, based on code of practice. Yes.
What about the role of SIMS?
The SIMS is not so much used in Statistics Norway. Each statistics report quality, they have their instruction for the for their own statistics, and then they report directly. Thank you.
Well, novelties in new initiatives is difficult to think in something that is really a new. In a general view, and maybe connecting all these questions, since the year, I think that the end of the 2013, we had, and this is freely accessible through their website, we use the SDMX, the European Standard Metadata System, for all the statistics in the INE. They are published and updated for all the statistics, not only for European statistics. And this has been the main role until one moment to give a quality report, user oriented, for all the products. And this is a fundamental step. Why? Because it was also the basis for the two other initiatives. One linked to the introduction of the GCBPM in the Spanish production systems. We have made some steps, intermediate steps, and for instance, in the quality unit indicators, so we pick up all the years in the reviews, internal reviews of the products. We have incorporated some of the quality indicators for the process, which is now linked to the GCBPM. And there is now, from the metadata department, they have started to introduce the SIMS. They have started to the... In fact, in this conference, is going to be present one colleague of us, finally, because she is ill, and Isabel Sánchez Luengo. She couldn't be here, and she's an expert, and she's introducing SIMS in our system. She's transforming the metadata, the current metadata, to the SIMS metadata, which is a challenging process. I don't know. The DSAP, we have used the DSAP. The last time was the previous period to the last peer review. It was in 2013. We don't use in this moment because we have substituted for other types of controls, as I mentioned.
No, just I can just no answer, but what to say? Thank you for your comments, for your positive comments. It is true, when we work, especially in international institutions, and we work with data for different countries, we work from the output point of view, not from the input point of view. That is, your qualities from the input, the process, everything. So, and it's when we work with these asymmetries, it is quite complex to identify if a country, which country is the right one. I think it's impossible, and always more than impossible, it's not possible, because there are probably problems in both countries or small things here and there. I have to say that, especially in the field of foreign direct investment, there is already a platform sponsored by Eurostat where the countries can share information about particular transactions or positions of big countries, big companies, big transactions. And normally, I mean, there are countries very active, countries less active, but sometimes it's almost impossible to reconcile a single transaction. Although we are talking about 50 billions, but sometimes, or 5 billions, it's very difficult. So this is what I said, if it's difficult at the micro data, when you have all the information of a company, you have always problems of confidentiality or these kind of things that make you very difficult to share all the information. But it is. Imagine what we can find at the level of the aggregate levels. And that was the reason of developing these indicators, to try to find some synthetic
ideas and not to be so telling a country you are the guilty of my asymmetries, these kind of things.
Thank you very much. More questions or comments? If not, then I believe that we will conclude this session and thank our speakers once more. Thank you very much for all of you.